It's no secret that President Trump and the media have a tense relationship. He often refers to press coverage he doesn't like as fake news and members of the media as enemies of the people. His administration also pulled the credentials of CNN White House correspondent Jim Acosta, who's been involved in a number of heated exchanges with Trump and other officials. During a news conference last week, he challenged the president on his assertion that the migrants making their way toward the U.S. through Central America constitute an invasion.
They're hundreds of miles away, though. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's not an invasion.
Honestly, I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN.
All right.
And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question. Mr. President, if I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, Mr. President, I had one other question, if I may ask, on the Russia investigation. Are you concerned that you may have
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation? Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN. Go ahead.
I think that's unfair.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible. And the way you treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way.
CNN is suing the White House over the revocation of Acosta's White House credentials. A ruling on that was expected today. Looks like it's postponed now till tomorrow. Our next guest says there's a long history of tension between presidents and the press. Doug Weed is a presidential historian, TV pundit, and author of more than 30 books, including Game of Thorns, the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and Donald Trump's winning strategy. He was also an advisor in both Bush administrations. Doug, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thank you, Rob. Great to be with you.
Well, before we start digging into some of the history of the press-president relationship, what is your take on the general relationship between President Trump and, I guess, let's say the mainstream media in particular?
Well, it's quite a hoot. I mean, I haven't seen anything like it. I've had the privilege of knowing five presidents, meeting six of them, and of the five presidents, none of them likes the press. Nobody likes critics, I guess. One was a Democrat, and he didn't like him any better than the Republicans did. So this sort of hostility goes with the territory, and it's always been around before the newspapers was the pamphleteers, and and they've been hot and heavy right from the beginning of the Republic.
Is there anything different, as you see it, about candidate Donald Trump and now President Donald Trump really using the press in some cases as a punching bag at rallies, on Twitter, or what have you?
Well, yes. You know, Mark Twain says history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes. So you can see that there's a transition going on with media, and you can see it very clearly. Ronald Reagan would never have taken on the press in a frontal assault like this. We haven't seen that since Spiro Agnew. And it was because Ronald Reagan had no choice. When Ronald Reagan gave a speech to the nation, it was bracketed both before and after by the comments and interpretations of members of the national media and their pundits, and he was at their mercy. Donald Trump lives in a new era, and he can use tweets to go direct to the American people over the heads of the media. So he may be seeing this as a chance to get out from underneath them and use these new social media as a way to be less captive of the corporate media.
Now, is there something, like him or not, Donald Trump clearly knew something about how to use, as you said, Twitter, and I think how to work in a 24-hour news cycle, wall-to-wall cable news, things like that. And I think back to FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who seemed to have an appreciation of radio, maybe a little ahead of other politicians. Is there something significant about a politician who can see a changing media landscape and learn to work with it?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. I mean, with FDR, he was hurt. He was burned by radio, and then he used it. So Father Coughlin, who was this radio pundit, a Catholic priest. He had an audience at one point of 30 million people. Can you imagine that on the radio? Very powerful figure.
I think we get that. No, I'm just kidding.
And FDR was so troubled by it, he used the IRS to investigate him. He tried to get him off the air, and he eventually succeeded. The Hearst newspapers, of course, went after FDR, but you're right. FDR used radio finally. It had burned him. He came back with it, just as Andrew Jackson was burned by a coalition of newspapers, and then he organized his own coalition of newspapers and dominated the country for several decades himself, even after he had left office. So, yes, there's no question that Donald Trump has used Twitter and social media in a new way, and everything's changing so fast now, Rob, who knows what'll be next.
Talking to Doug Weed, presidential historian, author of a number of books, including Game of Thrones, the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and Donald Trump's winning strategy, looking at the relationship between presidents and the press, often adversarial. So we've seen these tense moments in these press conferences, Doug. Is that a good thing? Regardless of who the president is, don't we want at least a chunk of the press to be really adversarial with whatever president happens to be in power?
Yes, I think so. it just as long as we understand that that's what happens. When Barack Obama was elected president of the United States, I had a bunch of my journalist friends who are African Americans, and they contacted me, and they were just in despair. And they said, "Has it ever been like this? Have you ever said what? What?" I said, "Have you ever seen it this bad?" I said, "What are you talking about?" "Well, the way they're treating the president." And I laughed. I said, "I got to tell you, they're treating Barack Obama better than they normally treat a president, I hate to tell you." And they said, "Really, really?" Because they were African-American. They loved him, and they couldn't believe that one of their own was getting beat up like this. I think we went through a period, frankly, with Barack Obama where we had such pride as a country in having elected an African-American as president that the media kind of pulled their punches with him. And when they came back out swinging again with Trump, which is really their normal their normal position, it caught a lot of people off guard. I think that one Harvard study showed that 91% of the stories were negative. That seems a little tough.
Barack Obama, you mentioned him, he gave a speech at the University of Illinois a couple months back, and here's somewhat he had to say about the media.
"It shouldn't be Democratic or Republican to say that we don't threaten the freedom of the press because they say things or publish stories we don't like. I complain plenty about Fox News, but you never heard me threaten to shut them down or call them enemies of the people."
Now, some people have pointed out that there were cases where the Obama administration tried to lock Fox out of certain press pools. And one of his communications directors said the administration would think of them as a political opponent. So talk about, I guess, Fox News under Obama. Do you see them being where CNN kind of is now under President Trump?
Well, the numbers look a little bit different to me. If you follow that Harvard study that has like 91% of the news stories negative, I don't think the percentage would be 91% negative towards Barack Obama. I think the fact that maybe it was 91% on Fox, but it was certainly not the total media. So I can see that Trump is hurt, but I have to tell you, all the presidents that I've known and talked to have felt hurt by the media. Jimmy Carter, who was a Democrat, told me that when he first was elected president, the first thing he did when he came into the White House was invite Katherine Graham into the private quarters of the White House for a private dinner upstairs in the family dining room. And he tried to build a relationship with the Washington Post, and he said the Washington media, the Washington press, never accepted me. He felt it was because of his religion as a Southern Baptist and his culture. So that's a Democrat. That's a liberal Democrat. So you certainly had that with Reagan. But Reagan, he just kind of smiled and pretended it wasn't going on. And I think that worked to his advantage.
We're talking about the relationships between U.S. presidents, past and present, and the press. Doug Weed is our guest. He's a presidential historian, TV pundit, author, and former advisor to Presidents George W. Bush and George H.W. Bush. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of President Trump's relationship with the media? Do you think the press covers him fairly or not? And what do you think of this pulling Jim Acosta from CNN, pulling his credentials for the White House press pool? Was that a good idea or going too far? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. We continue our conversation about the media and the presidency with presidential historian and author Doug Weed. You can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the relationship between President Trump and the news media? How do you think it compares with that of previous administrations? And at what point do you think a journalist's credentials could or should be revoked in the White House press pool, as we're seeing now with Jim Acosta from CNN? Do you think it was a mistake or the right move on the part of the Trump administration? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Sarah is with us in Milwaukee. Sarah, hi.
Hi. I just had a comment about your guest's characterization that all presidents are sort of maligned equally by the media. I wonder how he would frame the attacks on President Obama, especially like during his first campaign, about like producing his birth certificate and some other things that were kind of overtly racist. Like, does that compare to past and current presidents?
Sarah, thanks. Doug?
Yeah, actually, I referred to the Harvard study that showed that 91% of the stories they had done on Trump were negative, that Trump actually gets worse press than Barack Obama got. But we've had racism in this country throughout our history, and yes, we've had it in the media too. And the media and the press has always been vicious. I mean, George Washington was in despair over the feud that began inside his own cabinet and the development and emergence of political parties. In fact, the first pamphlets had one side accusing the Secretary of the Treasury of having a sexual affair and being blackmailed by the mistress's husband, and the other side accused Thomas Jefferson of giving birth to children with his underage slave. And they both turned out to be true, although it took us a couple hundred years in DNA to prove that one of them was true. So from the very beginning, we've had very lurid, very mean, very tough media, and often it was based on facts. So yes, it's bad. You remember when Andrew Jackson ran for president, they attacked his wife, and he kept her hidden from the media. He didn't want her hurt. And after he won the election, she went to Nashville to go shopping to buy her inaugural dress. And there were old newspapers stacked up in the shops, and the ladies escorting her were told to keep her away from the newspapers, but she got them. She started reading them. She read these attacks that she had committed adultery, that she was a bigamist, all these things that had been said during the campaign. She had a stroke. She died. She never wore the dress. She was never first lady. She never entered the White House. That was Andrew Jackson's wife. And those were the newspapers that had attacked her during that very vicious political campaign. So it seems bad and it's hurtful, but it's not new.
Sarah, thanks for the call. Go to Jeff now in Burlington. Jeff, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great program.
What did you want to bring up, Jeff?
Well, the question was asked, is the press unfairly reporting on President Trump? My opinion is that he wants what he's getting. He's a master at manipulating the press, and he constantly throws pitches in the dirt. And the press are, I will say, incautious enough to swing at them. If they concentrated on simply reporting what he actually accomplishes or fails to accomplish, you know, the level of rhetoric would be tuned down dramatically. Wasn't it P.T. Barnum who said, you can print whatever you want about me, just make sure you spell my name right?
That's Jeff, thanks for the call. And there's the maxim, there's no such thing as bad publicity as long as he's being talked about. President Trump seems happy. But how do you, traditionally in the media, the things a president says are newsworthy. How do you make a decision to ignore or not what a president's saying or tweeting?
Rob, how do you dare ignore it? You don't. And, of course, we've been talking about how the presidency has changed, but the media, the press has changed. It's show business now. I can't imagine Kenneth T. Walsh, who was president of the White House Press Association, distinguished. You could never guess if he was a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, meticulously fair. And yet you can never imagine him standing up like a Jim Acosta and becoming the story. He had too much class and too much devotion to the profession of journalism to do that. But Jim Acosta is the new journalist. That's where they are. They're part of the show. It's show business. It's no longer journalism, and that's very clear.
Thanks for the call. Talking to Doug Weed about the press-presidential relationship. Back to your calls. Deb is with us in Appleton. Deb, hi.
Hi. I have to disagree strongly with Mr. Weed here. I think the problem is the presidency. The president is not treating journalists with respect. The president factually lies, as reported by the Washington Post, 5,000 or 6,000 times. And when the press reports the lies, that's considered to be negative reporting on Mr. Trump. He really has degraded the presidency to such an extent that journalists finally do have to speak up so that the people know that their interests are being represented. Otherwise, this president just shouts them down and, you know, tells them to sit down and shut up.
Deb, thanks for the call. So, yeah, Doug, is it fair if a president is lying more per day than past presidents and the media covers those, is it fair to say they're covering him negatively if they're accurately reporting that the current president is telling untruths?
Well, I don't know. I'm not Harvard University. I wouldn't say that Harvard University is a tool of Donald Trump. They're, if anything, a more liberal institution, and they're the ones that conducted the study that claimed that 91% of the stories on Trump were negative. The president doesn't have to give a press conference. There's no constitutional requirement that he be as accessible as he is. If you'll remember, during the campaign, Hillary Clinton was criticized because she had gone 263 days without a press conference. Donald Trump gives everybody and their dog the right to interview him. He's the most transparent president in American history. So it's pretty hard to complain about him not being available to the press. And certainly he doesn't have to give these press conferences. And I can understand if they want to have journalists, other journalists ask questions. I think Jim had already asked three questions at the time. He was wanting to ask another one. There's nothing wrong with passing the mic to NBC or to someone else. But I can also understand the frustration of people. We're tribes. We're blue and red. We're Notre Dame, Penn State, Alabama. We got our own favorite team, and that's who we root for, and our whole identity is wrapped up in whether they win that day or lose that day.
I wanted to
when
ask
you, Bob, when you go to another country, which I do very often, and you look back at the United States, I'm often struck by how close the Democrat and Republican Party are. They're just very close. And when you compare them to the parties and the issues in their countries that, where there's great differences at stake in their elections, and yet sometimes the worst feuds and the most bitter hatred is among cousins and family members. And here it's the Democrats and the Republicans, as close as they are. One may advocate a policy. 2 years later, the other party will advocate the same policy, and the others will be opposed to it. That's our tribalism.
We'll leave it there for now. Doug, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Doug Weed, presidential historian, TV pundit, and author of more than 30 books, including Game of Thorns, the inside story of Hillary Clinton's failed campaign and Donald Trump's winning strategy. He was an advisor in both Bush administrations. We talked to him about the rocky relationships between U.S. presidents and the media. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll meet a Milwaukee Common Council member backing a plan to boost solar power in communities around the city. As state lawmakers debate a subsidy plan for the Kimberly-Clark Company, the county executive of Outagamie County, the area affected, joins us with a look at some of the history and what got us to this point where we have this debate now over kind of an 11th-hour effort to provide subsidies to keep at least some Kimberly-Clark jobs here in the state. It's this week's edition of Food Friday tomorrow as well with the author of the new book, Dinners for Two. You can listen along, make a meal, and then give me half of it. Plus, Rob Mentzer is back with us for our weekly look at some of the top stories in Wisconsin news. We'll find out what's going on around the state. All that, plus a look at some of the top news stories of the day. It's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.